Hi, everyone. You're listening to In the Open, a podcast by Mental Health America, where we talk all things mental health related.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of In the Open. I hope the year is working out well for you so far. So today we are going to be talking about overthinking, which is something I do quite often. And I think that Teresa does too. So we're going to talk about it and kind of hash out what it means to overthink everything, why we do it, and maybe potential solutions to help us address it. So, Teresa, do you overthink? Are you an overthinker?
So it's funny because when we were trying to find the title for overthinking this podcast, we started talking about processing.
Yeah.
And over-processing. And in our family, my husband and I, we're such processors. We do it so much that I have a hard time finding where it's unhealthy, right?
Yeah.
He is not just an over-processor, but we joke that his family comes from a family of loud processors, meaning they have to not just overanalyze what's happening in their heads. They have to do it out loud for everyone to hear, and it's very confusing.
I get that.
That was just like a totally different thing. But do you and I overthink? Yeah. Like, I think that we could solidly say that you and I are over-processors. I think it's useful to think about how that looks.
Yeah, I was going to say when I kind of envision overthinking, it's like, you know, when you have your computer and you have like 75 million tabs open and you know where all these tabs are, what these tabs are doing, but they're just all open and you're never finishing one thing. That's what I feel is overprocessing and overthinking. You're trying to focus your energies, your mind on so many things that in the end, for me, my best thing would be like, shut down, click over. But that's really hard to do.
So you're overthinking things is not just that you think about stuff. You think about a lot of things all at the same time.
Yes.
Okay. When you said a computer, I thought, oh, overprocessing for me sounds like, you know, when your computer is working so hard, it gets loud and angry.
Yeah. It's like, ooh.
It's like, you know, I feel like that's what my brain feels like. Not the tabs per se, but I could have like one or two tabs open and I will just sit with it and think about all the things about
that. That also makes sense.
Until my brain is literally going to explode and I come out of the darkness and I'm like, what the heck just happened? Like, where did your brain go for 10 freaking minutes about the dumbest thought?
Yeah. You know, sometimes too, what I'm thinking about is like one of the laptops that I have, it will get super hot when like stuff is like trying to run.
Yeah.
And then it will just shut down because it's too much. So I totally get that. I think it may depend on my mood of how it is that I'm feeling, whether it's maybe one or two tabs that are open and I'm really like, why do they have three periods here and not, you know, and like, and you just go down this rabbit hole, or it's this other extended kind of overthinking about so many things that I can't really close down any one of those thought processes.
So tell me about your life and when you realized you were an overprocessor.
I think I've known for quite a while that I've been an overprocessor. I wouldn't have referred to myself like that. I would just say that I analyze everything. And it was probably in my early 20s when I think there was a situation with my then boyfriend, and I was like, did he say that? Is that what he meant? And then I went to my friend, this is what he said. Is that what he meant? And they're like, I mean, yeah, it could have been that, you know, and it was kind of clear cut. And I was like, are you sure about that? You sure about that? Because I took it and interpreted this way, you know, because he said something like this similar like 2 weeks ago. And then she was like, yeah, no, I don't think it was that at all. So that's like one of the things that sticks out.
Yeah, I really relate to that. And just like even listening to you talk about processing about that kind of makes me feel excited.
Because you can relate to it so viscerally.
Yeah. And like, I could tell that like, oh, you're going to go down this path and we're going to go down together. And we're going to get excited with our dopamines, you know, like I'm like, oh, my brain really jives with this, which is kind of like part of the sickness with anxiety, right? It's like we're so trained up to just be all the time like blah, 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 blah. And like, honestly, until other people reflected it back on me, did I realize, oh, like other people don't do this. Other people don't like to do this, you know?
Yeah. Well, let me ask you a question, because when you think about this aspect of overthinking, overprocessing, is it tied to any one kind of aspect of your life? Is it more work-based? Is it you just on your daily kind of functioning?
Nah, man. It's like so ingrained in everything.
Okay.
I've always been an overprocessor. All people, I think, with depression, anxiety relate to overprocessing or any mental illness. Let's be honest, right? Schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, we're all overprocessors because our brain has kind of been trained to think this way for a lot of reasons, right? We live in a mind space, I feel like, is what happens. You know, some people, they're like heart people or gut people or and I do think that if you struggle with a mental illness, the way that your mental illness consumes your life kind of makes you a mind person, which makes you have super strengths. Like, this is like, overprocessing isn't always a bad thing.
Yeah,
for me,
completely true.
I have in my life identified when overprocessing or ruminating is bad, where I'm like ruminating on like things that aren't true or whatever. But in general, I overprocess. And like, I like what you said, you're analytical, you see it as that way. And I would say when my overprocessing is a strength, that is the kind of productive thinking that I can have. And curiosity, where it's not bad, where I'm like, oh, I'm like thinking through these things in a way that's like curious and exciting, you know? So it's not just bad.
You know what's funny though, babe? Like, when you're the way that you're talking about it right now, I lied, because when I was in middle school, I was part of this program where you had to be it was called like future problem solvers or something, right? Mm-hmm. And the whole idea was that you were given a problem and then you had to come up, you were given a situation and then you had to come up with problems and come up with solutions. Mm-hmm. I think that's kind of started. I was like, oh, and that kind of positive frame is like, yeah, dude, I can totally see different things from different angles. And then because of that, because of the overanalysis, essentially, I was then able to capture like, oh, you should be thinking of this far down the line, but you're not even paying attention because it's not right in front of you. But I already know, you see, I've been seeing it. Yeah. So way much earlier than 20.
I do remember even recently, though, it's like, even though I knew I had an anxiety brain and I could process everything, I had a friend recently who was like, oh, yeah, you and your husband like to process.
Oh, my God. They said that?
Yeah. And I was like, damn.
Like, thanks.
I know. And I was like, is that an insult or is that a compliment? You know, but
are you throwing shade, man? Or are you just being straight?
It doesn't. Okay, so I will say, like, part of overprocessing that's positive comes out of curiosity, but it comes out of also a desire to do the right thing. So, like, when I'm processing through all the things, like, if I want to make a decision, I have to overprocess it to be like, is this the right decision? You know, we have to talk about it to death. Before we take the next step. And if that's like part of my anxiety with contingency planning and like laying out all the safety protocols to make sure it's going to be okay, then I need to talk out all the things to feel calm enough to be like, okay, execute. You know, we feel good about this. And then every time something changes, we got to start the conversation over again, which for other people listening in who aren't like that, this is how it can drive them a little wild, because they're like, dude, y'all talked about this a million times. Like,
there's something about the fact of like people repeating the same thing again and again, and like this same scenario, and I'm like, oh my God, stop using the same words. It's not changing in any way. we need to make a decision. So there's a point where I'm able to like stop myself, and then I can see it in others and I'm like, okay, this is too much, because you continue to like, it's like you're washing away at it, trying to like get it clean, and nothing's happening. There's nothing happening.
I know. And so, that's where it is a compulsion. And this is how we can alienate our friends, by talking about the same things over and over, which is a real challenge, right? Yes. You're like, dude, your friend literally doesn't want you to keep talking about that thing again. Like, it's too much for them to carry that burden. So I think as part of trying to understand my overprocessing, it's also required me to be aware of the way that I externalize or like speak out that overprocessing that happens in my head as it's churning, which is why I'm not a loud processor. Probably shamed early on about being a loud processor.
Yeah, I'm not a loud processor either. It really is all internal. I know that when I'm thinking, you can see it on my face, and like, you know, my fiance will be like, what? And I'm like, nothing. And they're like, no, there's stuff going on. Dude, there.
You reminded me of how I came to learn that I was an overprocessor.
Okay, tell me.
Because people see it on your face. So you know how you're like having a conversation with the overprocessor, and you basically can tell that they're having a whole side conversation, not with you. That's me. I'm that jerk face friend who every time people are talking to me, and then like, I've had to practice listening, because I do have other voices in my head where I'm like, I will literally just talk to people and straight up have a whole conversation. And then come back and be like, oh, I'm sorry. I just
wasn't listening. Yeah, I totally missed that.
And like, practice the shame of acknowledging that you're like, oh, I wasn't listening to you at all. And like having to come back and like do that took time to learn how to acknowledge and see that I wasn't listening, because I was having an overprocessing moment in my head, and then like come back to be a good friend and say, dude, I'm sorry. I'm going to make you repeat that whole thing, because I'm like such a jerk right there in my brain.
But you know, what you're sharing is something I think that happens a lot with folks but people just don't talk about it. It's either kind of accepted as who you are. It's like, oh, that's just Teresa, you know, whatever. It doesn't matter. And then it's not until you really start to face some difficulties with it that you're then like, oh my God, can you please stop thinking? And I've done that. And I know we talked about it in some episode where people have an internal voice. Remember we talked about that?
Yeah.
And then there was an article that was like, some people don't have an internal voice. And I was like, what do you mean? Yeah,
we don't understand those people.
Yeah, no. Like, because what you're saying, I completely get, like, the voices in my head are like, America, stop. Don't do it. You know, and consistently there.
Yeah. Like multiple personalities though, right? Because you have your inner voice that's like totally digging it and just going down that freaking train. And then the other one that's like, why are you doing this?
Yeah.
You need to stop.
You're like, stop. Yeah.
And it is like that movie, that Disney movie.
Yes.
With all the personalities, and they're like screaming
at
each other.
What is it called? A little movie. I love that movie.
Inside Out. Inside Out.
Inside Out. Yeah, I love that movie. Because it really is, it's who you are as an individual, but it's all the different emotions that are tied to everything.
But that movie had the characters acting as feelings, which is true from a neurobiological perspective. But the voices in my head are personalities. They're like people. It's like, and we talk about this sometimes where it's like my anxiety voice, my rational voice, my like blah, blah, blah mind, right? It's like the mom in there who's like trying to scream at me to do better. You know, like I do feel like they have, this is like the closest thing to, I think, my version of understanding psychosis, where you have like multiple voices that people do actually, I don't know, like I spend a lot of time just wondering that, like, what is the experience for people who have psychosis who have like multiple voices in their head? Like, is it like that with the anxiety brain that has multiple internal voices? I just don't hear the voice out loud. I just hear it internally dialoguing.
And I feel that. I can totally relate to that, because I feel like in my body, I just start feeling like completely like overwhelmed. I maybe start sweating more. I'm just like, oh my God, stop. Yeah. And it's like you're trying to stop the train from like moving fast, and you're just like, I'm trying to pause a break and nothing's happening.
Yeah.
At different times, what has helped me is to, one, just try to be like, stop. Or, you know, I've had folks be like, you should try meditation. I'm like, that's why is your voice always like that? Because it's my wellness voice in my head. That is like,
practice calmness.
Yeah. You know, do some breathing. And it's like, okay, I am going to do my hardest to like try to put into practice all these things. But in that moment, it's not helping me.
Yeah. So we'll shift to like where overthinking doesn't feel good. I do agree with you. There's a sense of panic.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I know my overthinking is getting bad when it starts to affect my physiological responses, sweating, overwhelmness, the sense of urgency, like, or just like playing it over and over and over. I hate that. It's just like, why? It's like, you know, I used to do that a lot more, and it took a lot of practice to be like, I did have a stop voice.
And then what happened?
I agree that the stop voice couldn't be like this calm, breathy voice. It needed to equal the force of the train. I do have an anxiety train metaphor in my head where I'm like, my stupid ass is running towards the platform trying to hop on the damn anxiety train to take me wherever the frick it wants me to go, over and over and over, spinning so fast, right? And my stop voice had to be a jerk to basically
like jerk
counter,
you out of it.
Counter that desire to go down that path and be like, honestly, there was a time where I had to cuss at myself and be like, stop, MF-er. Like, be mean to myself.
Yes, yes. It has to create a wall, like literally, like in seconds, boom, you know, in your face, smack you in the face to be like, hey, I told you to stop.
Yeah.
If you're not doing it, I'm going to go worse, you know? And like, I get that.
Because if I was a loud processor, like that would be the version of a good friend who'd basically slap my face and be like, stop. This is unhealthy.
See, and I do have really good friends that I can try to process with. And like, and sometimes I'll just call and be like, dude, I got to tell you this and you have to help me because I got to get it out of my head. And they're like, okay. And they'll just sit with me, whatever, and listen. And then they'll be like, all right. So, you know, they help me break it down into the pieces to get me back to this logical kind of thinking. It's like, no, it's not going to work.
That's so nice that you have that, you know. I'll say that I feel a lot of shame associated with loud processing, which is why it was such a shock that people did it when I met my husband. And I was like, you guys all just get to like talk about the things that you think out loud, you know? Because growing up for us, it was like, don't loud process because it was equated to complaining.
Mm, I can see that.
And so I was real trained up on just like bottling it all in, which also meant that nobody knew I had problems. Like if people had asked if they thought that Teresa had problems, like no one would have said that they did, even though I was arrested and smoking cigarettes. You know what I mean? Like I was clearly not in a good space. But because I was shy and quiet, like I just flew under the radar.
You know, when I used to work directly with young adults, that was the thing, right? Like if you're shy and quiet, you're not a troublemaker because you're shy and quiet. You would never. But those are the kids that are struggling the most because the ones that are outwardly like cursing at you and like fighting with you, they're at least voicing whatever it is that they're feeling in some way. And I was kind of in the in-between space, you know. My parents, my dad mostly is a processor. My mom, not so much. So I learned to process with my dad. But there is some shame attached to it, like where a lot of the internal conversations that occur are tied to things that, you know, I just have questions about. And that curiosity that you're talking about, like, man, I love learning. Like I could learn something every day is amazing, right? But then when it gets tied to, did you write that the right way? You could have written it a different way. You could have said it a different way. Now, how the person then responds, I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah.
You're going to take it and run with this sucker.
That's really funny because I'm realizing like, for a lot of people, I think where overprocessing or overthinking gets bad is where it ties to your personhood.
Yeah.
If you perceive an attack on your personhood, if you feel vulnerable because of your identity, the shoulda, woulda, coulda. It's like, am I an ex? Am I a bad person, a failure? Did I do that wrong? That's the commonality. It's not the kind of shoulda, woulda, couldas. It literally is just about – a lot of it is about identity, right? And feeling secure in who you are.
I've always focused when I've talked to different groups and things like that around this idea of how when we're growing up and we don't have the space to really be honest with our emotions, then we learn really unhealthy habits to then kind of mask them with acceptable things, right? So when you may feel shame or guilt about you feeling not good enough or something, you kind of like, I'm sorry. And you put a caveat there. Well, you know, if I were to do it, it would have been this way, you know, and you don't feel that confidence. So then when you turn it internally, right? And you know how many conversations I've had with the mirror, dude, like all the time, that is just like, stop thinking that way. And it's really hard, man.
Do you do that thing, this thing where as part of your overprocessing these negative thoughts, like find yourself over-apologizing? That is where I would out loud process. It's like whatever was going on in my head, what would come out would be like, oh, I'm sorry about everything. I'm sorry about taking up space. I'm sorry about the words that are coming out of my mouth. I'm basically sorry for existing.
I will say those words, but I don't believe them. I use them as and it's in a sarcastic tone. When I feel some way that I'm not being appreciated or I'm not being valued or heard, I would be like, oh, well, I'm sorry for sharing, oh, you know? You know? That's the way I use it.
I need to turn my shame voice and shame monster into a sarcastic monster, because that would be like a really good way. I mean, I don't apologize as much anymore, but that's because I was then shamed for apologizing. People were like, stop apologizing all the time. It's annoying. Like, damn, I can't even do that.
Yeah, I haven't had that experience, babe, where I'm just like, I'm sorry for feeling like I haven't had that. Really, what I end up doing and what I think it's come about naturally because I've been, you know, trying to deal with this forever and I still struggle with it, is that when I feel that I'm getting to this place of overprocessing, I sometimes just really have to stop and be like, what are you even thinking about? Mm-hmm. What are you thinking about? Is it the actual event, or you're like, now you've processed so much, you've gone down a rabbit hole that you're thinking about what you did at 4 years old and how it impacts what you have, you know? It's like, and you're exhausted by it.
I was going to ask you, is that how it looks today? Because we've been over processors all of our lives and we've kind of talked about the different ways they impacted us. Is that how it is today? You're like, you still kind of go down that whole train?
Not as often and not as severely, you know. Yeah. I'm able to like modify it a bit, but I also am able to now pick up when I'm getting to that place. And it goes to that, you know, whether it's like the physical aspects of it's like turn everything off, walk away. And when it really like ignites, like I'm thinking about like, you know, when you turn on the stove and it's like and it pops, is when I get angry. You know, and the anger then is like, well, I said this and you said that and we said this and then it just gets jumbled back into this mess.
Okay, I think that's worth summarizing because I do relate to that. So I'm still an overprocessor. I will overprocess to the point of exhaustion. Mm-hmm. I have learned to put a cap on it so that I don't piss off the people around me, except when I overprocess in my head to the point where I become irritated. And once the mood is an irritated mood, then that like irritation monster definitely just it creates like a fog in the house.
It creates a tornado, not a fog, man.
Well, the irritation is a fog until you blow up, and then a tornado or some crap being thrown, which is not cool. It makes you feel horribly bad when you blow up at people. I think it's worthwhile to summarize the details about what happens, because you did say like there were two key points I think that are common in mental health like treatment stuff, right? It's like first you had to tell yourself to stop, but then you dove in and had intentional thinking, like what people call intentional thinking. It's like you had to stop and then be like, wait, what is it that you're thinking?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think that's a really important second step. for stopping, we have to acknowledge, takes practice. Mm-hmm. Years of learning how to stop and tell yourself to stop. And intentionally thinking about it, like lean in, ask yourself those questions. I think that's a whole process too. So let's talk about that.
Yeah. You know what it makes me think about is me like walking into my bedroom closet and just closing the door and sitting in the dark and just be like, why? Help me understand. This is all self-talk, right? Help mm-hmm. me understand what is getting your emotions in place. Like what's yeah. happening? Was it X thing? Was it this other thing? And yeah. it goes back to breaking it down into these logical kind of buckets.
Yep.
Because I function from a place of logic, right? That's my most comfortable space.
Yeah.
And by doing that, then I can be like, oh, you didn't care about bucket A. You actually cared about bucket D. And yeah. then you made it about bucket A. And it's like, ugh.
Yeah.
You know.
That is, I've told people that I've done that. And for people at different places of recovery, they talk about how exhausting even that one process is. And it is exhausting, but it's the important work of moving your energy from that ruminating cyclical thought to
yeah.
intentional thinking that is exhausting, but will be ultimately shorter and less exhausting than the over-processing
yes.
exhaustion. Completely. And I like what you said, because you were like, because I do think of something similar. It's like, what exactly happened? What was the thing that the person did that made you mad? Because you can kind of globalize it too much and just be like, oh, I'm pissed at that person. But you're like, no, they did something that triggered you. What mm-hmm. was the action that they did? What did they say that pissed you off? And that's really important, because you have to, I find that I had to tie that action to how it made me feel. When they did that, it made me feel this way. And then it took a long time to understand what I was feeling, like real feelings, not like I feel like they're a jerk. Like that's not a feeling, right? It's like, no, I felt vulnerable. I felt scared. I felt insecure. I felt alone. I felt unheard. Like these are, it's just like, I'm not even sure unheard is a feeling, but
of course it is.
Like this is the stage where once you've stopped, then you practice how to slow your thoughts.
Yeah. What you're saying though, Teresa, and one of the things that really, and I hope others kind of hear it too, is like this could occur. You may overprocess when you're having an interaction with another person, but sometimes it's overprocessing from my own behavior, you know, like mm-hmm. I'm going to go buy waffle mix. I don't know, something like that, right? And then I go to the grocery store and I'm standing in the freaking aisle and there's like 75 million choices and I finally grab one and then I buy the wrong one and yeah. then I will go down and I'm like, oh my God. And so then again, in that space, I have to ask myself, what is the thing that is upsetting you?
Yeah. What does that mean about buying the exact perfect waffle maker or whatever you were? I think a lot of people I've talked to relate to that. Just like even mundane things like going mm-hmm. to the store to buy this. And different people have different versions. Sometimes it means over researching something on the internet to death and then you don't even buy the thing.
Mm-hmm.
So physically sitting in a store and being like, I was sent to the store to go get X and now I've spent 45 minutes looking at jam.
Yeah.
Yes. And then it's hard not to like feel bad about that, because you're like, why? That is the part that is important. It's like, why is it important to you to find the right jam?
Yes.
What is the expectation there about who you are and what you're bringing home to the table about that damn jam? You know? Because that's what we carry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At the end of this practice, right? At the end of the day, that's the most important piece. You have to understand and rationalize to the point that you're asking yourself, what is causing me to go down this path? Why do you want to jump on this train, man? Like mm-hmm. it ain't even going in a good direction. Like, just stand right on the platform and just relax for a moment and think through the options that are available to you. And that's what I've had to come to learn how to do.
Yeah.
And that's where my anxiety may pick up, where I'm training myself, continuously training myself to be like, okay, refocus, walk away, shut down the computer, whatever you need.
Oh, walk away. Walk away is so many layers. It's walk away from your own thought process. It's walk away from the battle you feel like you need to win with your partner or your boss or your teacher, you know? Because you're like, you can be super aggressive and feel like, or I have been like super aggressive and like coming at my partner or whatever. But then I'll just take that conversation inside my head too. It's part of the overprocessing. So walk away. Then where do you go?
I really get to this place of shutting down because I'm exhausted by it. That I just have to just be like, that's it. I quit. I'm not thinking anymore today.
You say it's quitting, but I feel like there's a part of it that's acceptance too. It's like, you know, it's okay.
Yeah, I mean, there is acceptance. There is acceptance there that, you know, this I'm still learning. Maybe a little bit of disappointment. It's like, man, why'd you do that again? But you get to this place for me is like, I got to take a break. Something's causing me. And until I figure out that something, I got to take a break to be able to just disengage. And that's how I see it. You're really disengaging mentally from that twirling kind of thought process.
That's probably really good, you know, to remind yourself that in the middle of this process, it is about training your brain to be in that calm space and that calm state. Because for overprocessors, we're always in that state of excitement, like mental excitement that we've trained our brain to be there. And I will say the reason why I'm better today is because I have retrained my brain to be more in that space of calm. Which is what all the people who are like, oh, meditation does that. I'm like, but it is and it isn't. Like, yes, meditation is a form of practice that can help you get to that state. But what we just described as a process is a different kind of activity or step that you can take to retrain your brain.
Yeah.
I was going to say my last step, I didn't make this up. I mean, I think most people, like our path to calm worksheet, I worked with Danielle on that, is like the last step is to say, what do you need? What's your next step? What help do you need? What do I need in this moment? Like based on what happened and what I feel. It's like, what do I need to do now? That's productive, not unproductive, right? Like,
okay, because I mean, like, I want ice cream.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, sometimes like I need ice cream. Like right now I do need ice cream.
It's some sort of self-soothing that you have to provide for yourself, I think.
It can be. When it comes to relationships, I also have found that I'll say like, oh, I need to talk to this person to tell them X. Or I need to not go down that path. The next time I need to say this as a response, not that. It's kind of like your version of eat this, not that. It's like, say this, not that.
Yeah.
Or yeah, a lot of times it's like, okay, what I need is to step back. I need distance from this. Take a freaking walk.
Yeah.
Take some breaths. Don't be a jerk, you know, or it's like internal. It's like, oh, I need to take care of myself, which is always like a painful one. Like when you realize like, oh, the way you're ruminating is like you beating yourself up again. And it's kind of painful for you to be like, oh, I fell into this trap and I need to, when you said self-soothe, like it's so deep. Like it's not just like calming yourself through ice cream.
Yeah, completely.
That process of like self-compassion and to realize like, oh, you did that thing again where you like went through your process of self-hatred and practicing.
That's like the disappointment thing that I'm telling you. It's like, oh man. And then you got to kind of bounce back and be like, all right, you learn from it, move on. And that's how I process that piece of it. And just like, okay, keep going.
Keep on going. We're like Disney Day today.
I think it's actually Pixar, but they're all a company. But nonetheless, yes.
Wow. Yeah.
I'm sorry, but that's the truth.
Any last thoughts?
Just try to take in what we're saying, you know. And if it hits anywhere in your mind that, you know, man, is that me? Then try to help yourself out. I mean, that's all we're trying to do. We're just trying to help each other out.
Yeah. I kind of walked us right into a trap when I asked us any final thoughts on an overthinking podcast, because you and I both were like, wait, that's like too weighty. I can't give a final thought.
I don't have any final thoughts because I'll just go into a train. Yeah. We are all just doing the best we can.
That did resonate. Just like, everybody's just doing the best you can. Every moment of the day. Be good to yourself and fight in the open.
Yeah, fight in the open. Continue to do so. All right.
Gotta go.
Bye, guys. We'll talk to you next week.